Mahabharata, Chapter 63, Abhimanyu's Incomparable Power. After deciding to regroup the Kauravas, Drona went over to Susharma and said, "O King, your vow remains unfulfilled. Arjuna will doubtlessly accept your challenge again. Go with your brothers and draw that hero toward the south. We will try again to trap Yudhisthira." Susharma immediately left with his three remaining brothers. They were followed by the surviving Shamshaptakas, Trigartas, and Narayans. All the warriors blew their conches and roared, their minds fixed on victory or death. Seeing Susharma stationed across from him blowing his conch and shouting a challenge, Arjuna broke away from the Pandava army and rushed once more towards him. Gradual maneuvering brought him toward the south, as Drona arranged the rest of the Kaurava forces into the Chakravyuha. Soon the circular array was formed, with the invincible Kaurava chiefs stationed at its key points. In ranks, the soldiers advanced toward the Pandavas. Duryodhana and his brothers stood in the center of the formation, supported by Karna and Kripa. At its head stood Drona and his son, backed by many kings and their forces, who spread out behind him in a vast circle. As Drona closed on his foes, he let loose hundreds of winged arrows. Immediately, a massive wave of shafts flew toward the Pandava army, along with lances, darts, iron balls, and battle axes. The warriors' cries filled the air. Seeing that his enemies had arranged themselves in the impenetrable Chakravyuha, Yudhisthira became thoughtful. Only Arjuna knew how to break that array. He had mentioned it to his brothers, but he had not told them the secrets that he had learned from Drona. But Yudhisthira recalled Arjuna saying how he had once discussed the knowledge with Subhadra, and that Abhimanyu had overheard him speaking. The prince was their only chance. Yudhisthira called for him and said, "O son, I think that apart from yourself, there are none in our army who can break the arrangement of the troops now advancing toward us. Your father, Krishna, and Pradyumna are the only warriors on earth who know the secret of breaking it, and I understand that you are a fourth knower of this secret, having heard it from your sire. O heroic prince, Drona surely intends to push through our forces with this unbreakable formation. Throwing us into disarray, he will then try to capture me. Tell me, dear child, can you smash through these troops today?" Abhimanyu stood proudly in his chariot, clad in bright armor, his bow clasped in his hands, and his standard waving in the breeze. The handsome youth looked exactly like a powerful hero among the gods. Although only 16 years old, he was already one of the foremost fighters in the Pandava army. But he seemed uncertain as he replied to Yudhisthira, "O king, what you say is true. I am conversant with the method of breaking and entering this array, but I do not think it possible for me to get out again. My father has not yet taught me that knowledge. I will be like an insect impelled by anger to rush into fire. If any danger should befall me, I will be trapped." Yudhisthira reassured him, "Do not fear, O mighty armed one. My brothers and I will be right behind you, along with Drishtadyumna, Satyaki, and all the Panchalas, Kekayas, Matsyas, and Prabhadrakas. We will protect you from all sides." Bhima, who had overheard the conversation, added, "We will follow you closely, O hero. Once we enter the array, we will smash it apart." Hearing his uncle's assurances, Abhimanyu became confident. He raised his sword and loudly said, "Today I will achieve something that will glorify both my mother's and father's family. I wish to please my father and my uncle. All creatures will see me. A single child of the Vrishnis crush the enemy host. I will not consider myself the son of either Partha or Subhadra if anyone I encounter today escapes with his life, or if I fail to enter the array." Yudhisthira blessed the prince. "May your words prove true, O son of Subhadra, and may your strength increase even as you speak. Go now, and we shall not be far behind you, supported by troops who are no less than the celestials." Abhimanyu looked at the advancing Kauravas. He ordered his charioteer, "O Sumitra, urge the horses toward Drona's divisions. I will break his formation apart, just as the sun dispels the clouds." Sumitra, the son of Krishna's charioteer, Daruka, drove toward Drona. As the chariot thundered across the field, he spoke with apprehension. "It is my duty to protect you, O best of men. Consider carefully the heavy burden that has been placed upon you. Drona is adept in all kinds of weaponry. He is surrounded by warriors who have yet to be defeated, all arranged in a mighty formation. You, on the other hand, are a child raised in luxury. You have not known the rigors of hard battle. This will certainly be your most difficult fight." Abhimanyu laughed. "O charioteer, who is this Drona? Who indeed are all these Kshatriyas supporting him? I would fight with Indra mounted on Aravata and attended by the immortals. How are these foes competent to fight in a battle with even a 1/16th part of me? I, who have the world-conquering Vishnu as my uncle and the famous Arjuna as my father, will not quake with terror at the sight of any enemy within these three worlds. Drive on, O Sumitra. Make straight for Drona." Sumitra looked at the solid wall of enemy troops. With a heavy heart, he urged on the horses, which were decorated in gold and silver. The chariot raced toward Drona, with Abhimanyu firing volleys of arrows at him, and all the warriors by his side. Seeing the standard bearing the Kanikara tree, Drona recognized Arjuna's son. As the prince charged toward the Kauravas, he seemed like a young lion attacking a herd of elephants. Drona issued orders and began the counterattack. Abhimanyu carefully directed Sumitra, and his chariot swayed from side to side as he avoided weapons and came in at an oblique angle toward the Kaurava ranks. Maintaining his fierce attack on Drona, he simultaneously hurled arrows at the warriors fighting at his sides and rear. As they fell back under his assault, Abhimanyu suddenly veered away to the right. Stunning Drona with 100 steel shafts, he raced past him and broke into the formation as the Kauravas looked on in amazement. A frightful encounter ensued as the outer rank of the formation broke apart. The confused battle between the prince and the densely packed troops appeared like the eddies produced when the Ganges meets with the ocean. Large numbers of elephant fighters, horsemen, charioteers, and foot soldiers closed in around Abhimanyu, all roaring in delight. Subhadra's son began to cut down his foes with arrows. He rushed about amid his enemies like a whirlwind. It seemed to the Kauravas as if they were contending with hundreds of Abhimanyus. As various musical instruments sounded, shouts of, "Slay him! Fight with me! Where are you going?" mixed with the battle cries, the twang of bowstrings, and the clash of weapons. The cries of elephants, the roar of warriors, the tinkling of ornaments, and the clatter of chariot wheels combined to create a deafening and confused din that made everyone's hair stand on end. Abhimanyu ranged about, slaughtering the Kaurava warriors by the hundreds of thousands. His speed and agility were incomparable. The soldiers who faced him were like moths flying into the fire. Abhimanyu quickly covered the earth with the bodies of slain warriors, like a priest laying kusha grass on the ground during a sacrifice. Well-muscled arms, graced with bracelets and gold bangles, were lopped off, still clutching their weapons. Other arms lay with their hands stretched out, looking like five-hooded serpents thrown about by Garuda. Handsome heads adorned with fine helmets and smeared with the best perfumes rolled in the ground like ripe fruits fallen from the trees. Once within the Kaurava's vyuha, Arjuna's son careened in all directions. None of his foes could fix their aim on him, so swift was his movement. His arrows flew like streams of golden sunlight. He brought down huge elephants with their riders, scattering their armor and weapons. Horsemen fell from their saddles, slain by shafts that passed clean through their bodies. Their horses reared in fear and were cut down by Abhimanyu's relentless volleys. The animals lay about, weltering in gore, their eyes bulging and tongues hanging out. Sending men and beasts to the blissful regions of departed heroes, Abhimanyu charged repeatedly, uttering fearful war cries. As he displayed various maneuvers, the Kaurava heroes thought him beautiful. They shouted in appreciation. Despite their best efforts to train their weapons on him, they could find no gaps in his defenses. Rather, as they approached him, they were struck by dozens of his speeding arrows. The Kauravas appeared like the Asura army mangled by Skanda. Subhadra's son moved fearlessly and swiftly through them, leaving a trail of carnage. Thousands of Kaurava fighters threw down their weapons and fled the fight. Forsaking their wounded relatives and friends, they ran wildly in all directions. Elephants ran screaming, and swift horses galloped at full tilt away from Abhimanyu, leaping over fallen soldiers who filled the blood-soaked earth. Duryodhan was incensed. Reckless of his own safety, he rushed to Abhimanyu with a roar. Seeing this, Drona was alarmed, and he shouted to the warriors around him, "Save the king!" Ashvatthama, Kripa, Karna, Shakuni, Shalya, and another half-dozen heroes all converged on Abhimanyu. The young prince was covered with a thick downpour of arrows. Spinning on the terrace of his chariot, he countered the arrows with his own as Sumitra maneuvered his chariot clear. He pierced every one of his assailants with stinging arrows that could hardly be seen as they flew. The Kaurava warriors then attacked Abhimanyu on all sides. They rained down their shafts by the thousands, but the prince either warded them off or dexterously evaded them. Some shafts penetrated his defenses and pierced his armor, but he did not flinch. Taking careful aim, he sent a dozen arrows that broke apart the chariot of King Ashmaka, a powerful Kaurava ally. With a further six arrows, he slew the king's four horses, his charioteer, and the king himself. Seeing the monarch slain, the Kaurava soldiers turned and fled. Duryodhan and Karna fought side by side, sending their arrows at Abhimanyu in volleys. Bearing the arrows like a mountain bears showers of rain, Abhimanyu sped at Karna, a powerful arrow capable of piercing his armor. It struck him on the shoulder and dug deep into his body. Pained, Karna shook like a hill in an earthquake and fell into a swoon. Abhimanyu then stunned Duryodhan with 16 arrows and followed that by slaying four more kings supporting the Kaurava. Shalya and Ashvatthama assailed him from both flanks at once. Exhibiting the speed and skill of his father, Abhimanyu shot his steel-tipped shafts at Shalya and sent him reeling in his chariot. As the arrows struck Shalya, Abhimanyu spun around and released a dozen more at Ashvatthama. Drona's son was rocked by their force, and he squatted down on the terrace of his chariot. The Kauravas facing Abhimanyu fled in greater and greater numbers. Only the foremost heroes could stand against him. Even they were soon overpowered by his furious attack. As he ranged about on his glittering chariot, Siddhas and Charnas praised him from the skies. The Kauravas also cheered him, feeling simultaneous awe and anger as they were forced back by his peerless martial skills. Abhimanyu slew thousands of Kauravas, anyone who came before him. Shalya's younger brother, Madra, seeing Shalya afflicted by Abhimanyu, rushed angrily at him. He hurled 20 blazing darts at him, but the prince cut them to pieces. Abhimanyu counterattacked Madra with long shafts that shattered his chariot and cut off his arms, legs, and head simultaneously. As Madra fell dead from his chariot, thousands of soldiers in his army charged angrily at Abhimanyu. Calling out their names as they attacked, they shouted, "You will not escape with your life today, even if it cost us our own lives." Subhadra's son met their attack with a deadly volley of arrows. He invoked celestial missiles that he had received from his father and uncle. His bow resembled the blazing summer sun as he sent waves of horseshoe-headed and calf-tooth-headed shafts slamming into the Korva warriors, tearing them apart. With crescent-headed and barbed shafts, Abhimanyu mangled his foes mercilessly. He carved through their divisions unchecked, dispersing them as the sun disperses mist. Drona could not conceal his admiration for Arjuna's son. Duryodhan had come up to him, and the preceptor said, "Just see, O king, how this youthful prince advances against our forces, giving delight to his friends and relatives. I do not think any bowman is his equal. Surely he could annihilate our entire host if he so desired." But Duryodhan was enraged. Still, he smiled and said to Karna, who had stopped next to him, "It is clear the preceptor is affectionate toward Arjuna's son. Otherwise, why does he not slay him? None can resist the angry Drona when he stands with his weapons in battle. He spares this youth out of love for Arjuna. Protected by Drona, Abhimanyu is able to exhibit his prowess. Well, the time has come to kill him. O Karna, waste no time in slaying this arrogant child. Crush him at once." Dushasan heard his brother's words and replied, "Leave this to me. I will slay him before the Pandava's eyes. Hearing that I have killed this boy, Krishna and Arjuna, the two braggarts, will surely go to the regions of the departed. Without doubt, all their kinsmen will be consumed by grief and will follow their path. Wish me well, O king. I will now challenge Subhadra's overly proud son." Dushasan rushed at Abhimanyu with a loud cry. He fired a shower of arrows, decked with buzzard feathers, that covered Abhimanyu's chariot. The young prince smiled as he recognized his antagonist, and he struck him at once with 24 shafts. Not tolerating the attack, Dushasan increased the ferocity of his own assault. He fired at Abhimanyu arrows and darts that blazed brilliantly as they flew toward him. The prince countered the missiles and returned his own in large numbers. Both combatants exhibited various maneuvers in their chariots, showing skills that delighted the onlookers. The Kauravas sounded all kinds of musical instruments and cheered as Dushasan pressed his attack on Abhimanyu. Holding off his opponent's attack, Abhimanyu called out to him, "By good luck, I find before me a vain warrior of cruel deeds and lost righteousness. He whoever brays of his own prowess and knows only sinful deeds. With joy you pierced Yudhisthira and Bhima with your wicked words. Pay for that crime now, O evil-minded one. Suffer for the sin of grasping the sinless Draupadi's hair. Reap the fatal fruits of your arrogance, violence, covetousness, and persecution of others. I shall now chastise you severely before all these warriors, thus freeing myself from the burden of anger I bear against you." In a matter of seconds, Abhimanyu fixed an effulgent golden arrow on his bow and fired it with all his power. It dug deeply into Dushasan's shoulder, and he dropped his bow. Abhimanyu struck him with a further 25 shafts that burned like fire. Pierced on his chest and arms, the Kaurava squatted in pain and fell into a swoon. His charioteer quickly carried him from the fight. Seeing Dushasan overpowered, Karna came to challenge Abhimanyu, but he too could not defeat the young warrior. Abhimanyu gradually forced him back with dozens of arrows. With his standard cut down and his armor shattered, Karna fell back and turned away. He was being supported by sons of Adirath, whom Karna considered his own brothers. One of them rushed at Abhimanyu in a rage. He launched 100 arrows at him and sent up his battle cry. Abhimanyu turned to face the impetuous warrior. The young prince, whose mind was free from malice, struck Karna's brother with 30 powerful arrows. He broke his standard, killed his horses, shattered his chariot wheels. As his antagonist fired back, Abhimanyu lopped off his head with a crescent-headed shaft. The Kaurava troops cried out in sorrow. None of them were able to face Abhimanyu, who stood on the field like a blazing sacrificial fire. He blew his conch and began to range among the Kauravas, sending deadly shafts in all directions. He slew thousands of men as he fought within the circle formation. Yudhisthira, Bhima, The twins, Justadumna, Drupada, Virata, and the other chiefs among the Pandavas had watched Abhimanyu break into the Kaurava's midst. As he entered the Vyuha, like an elephant breaking through a grove of trees, he left a large gap in the outer ranks. The Pandavas made swiftly for the gap, intending to follow the boy into the formation. Suddenly, Jayadrath came forward and challenged the Pandavas. Placing himself between them and the smashed Vyuha, the Sindhu king attacked all of them with profuse arrows. Empowered by Lord Shiva's boon, Jayadrath fought fearlessly. He checked all four Pandavas. According to Lord Shiva's boon, the Sindhu monarch did not encounter Arjuna, who was fighting with the Shamshaptakas far away on the battlefield. Arjuna's brothers could not overpower Jayadrath as they hurried to follow Abhimanyu. The Pandavas were astonished. Unaware of the boon, they were amazed at Jayadrath's ability to hold them all at bay. Even though the advancing Pandava warriors trained their weapons on him, they could not get the better of him. As they struggled to get past Jayadrath, the Kauravas reformed. The Pandavas looked on helplessly as the Chakravyuha closed, trapping Abhimanyu inside. Dozens of powerful Kaurava heroes came up to assist Jayadrath, praising his prowess and holding off the Pandavas. A fight took place on the edge of the Kaurava formation while Abhimanyu wrought havoc within it. Faced by impenetrable ranks of warriors, the Pandavas saw no way to reach Arjuna's son. Within the formation, Duryodhan grew increasingly anxious. No one seemed able to stop Abhimanyu. Whoever went before him was either immediately slain or forced to retreat. He had overpowered all the great Kaurava heroes, including Karna, Kripa, Ashvatthama, Shalya, Kritavarma, and Balika. Duryodhan himself had been stung by his shafts, and even Drona seemed unable to check him. As Duryodhan gazed at Abhimanyu, hurtling among his forces like a fireball consuming everything in its path, Shakuni said, "We will not be able to slay this prince by fair means. Find some other way to kill him. All of us together must assail him before he destroys everyone." Hearing the suggestion, Karna said to Drona, "O preceptor, tell us how to kill Abhimanyu." Drona looked at Abhimanyu with respect and admiration. "Have any of you seen any weakness in that prince? Although you have all attacked him with care, you have not seen the slightest gap in his defenses. Indeed, all you could see was a swirling bow, constantly drawn into a circle, firing his flaming shafts. That slayer of hostile heroes is affording me great delight, even as he afflicts my limbs with his burning arrows. I see no difference between him and his illustrious father." Karna grew impatient upon hearing Abhimanyu praised. His voice rang out again. "O Brahman, I too have been wounded by this boy. Only my adherence to Kshatriya duty keeps me on the field. He has almost slain the king himself, and he is annihilating our troops. Please tell us how we can check him." "Abhimanyu is virtuous and faithful," replied Drona. "He is powerful and has been taught by both Arjuna and Krishna. Arjuna has shown him how to encase himself in impenetrable armor. None of us will be able to strike him down." Drona lowered his head as he went on. "There is, however, a way by which we may be able to overcome him. O Karna, listen carefully. If you can cut his bow, the reins of his horses, and his chariot wheels, and then at the same time Kritavarma can kill his horses, Ashvatthama can kill his charioteer, while Kripa, the king, and I attack him directly. Perhaps if six of us attack him simultaneously, we will be able to overpower him." Drona knew that his advice was not in keeping with the codes of combat, but there seemed no alternative. Ultimately, as the Kaurava commander, it was his duty to protect the army by whatever means. Heavy-hearted, Drona prepared to attack Abhimanyu, along with the other five Kaurava chiefs. They surrounded the prince, and Karna cut apart his bow. Kritavarma then killed his steeds, and Ashvatthama his driver. As Drona and Kripa assailed him from the front, Duryodhan attacked him from behind. With his horses killed and his chariot immobilized, the prince leapt down, clutching his sword and buckler. Swiftly whirling his sword, he cut down the arrows that sped toward him. The 6 Kauravas closed on Abhimanyu as he fended off their attack with his sword and shield. Realizing that he was hemmed in, Abhimanyu suddenly leapt high into the air. By his mystic power, he remained in the sky. With his golden armor gleaming in the afternoon sun, he appeared like a great eagle as he roved about in the air. He displayed various motions known as the Kauriska, and others wheeled about and brandished the brilliant blue sword. Beneath him, the Kaurava soldiers were filled with fear, expecting him to fall upon them at any moment. Drona gazed up and fixed his aim on Abhimanyu's sword. With a razor-headed shaft, he cut that weapon off at the hilt. At the same time, Karna broke apart his shield with 4 swift shafts. Abhimanyu descended weaponless from the sky and picked up a chariot wheel. Remembering how Krishna had run at Bhishma holding a chariot wheel, he rushed at Drona, covered in blood, his long hair flying in the wind, and his handsome face covered with dust from the field. The prince was beautiful as he ran with the wheel raised above his head. Even though overpowered and outnumbered, the son of Krishna's sister showed no fear. As the boy came rapidly toward them, with the steel-rimmed wheel, Drona and Kripa broke it into many pieces with their arrows. Abhimanyu snatched up a heavy mace that lay near him and bounded toward Ashvatthama, whirling the mace over his head. Seeing Abhimanyu charging at him like the 3-eyed Shiva at the end of the Yuga, Ashvatthama jumped off of his chariot. As he landed on the ground, Abhimanyu's mace descended like a blazing bolt and smashed the chariot to pieces, killing the horses and charioteer. With arrows protruding from every part of his body, Abhimanyu whirled about, wielding his mace. In a matter of minutes, he slew Shakuni's brother, Kalikeya, along with 80 of his followers. He then slew 10 chariot fighters, followed by a dozen elephants and 50 Kekaya warriors. Dushasana's son, Durjaya, charged on his chariot toward the prince. Abhimanyu quickly brought down his mace from above his head and killed Durjaya's 4 horses, pressing them into the earth. Durjaya leapt clear, taking his own mace with him. Landing on the earth near Abhimanyu, he bellowed out a challenge. Abhimanyu ran straight at Durjaya. The 2 combatants fought angrily, striking each other with their maces and producing sounds like thunderclaps. Finally, in one wheeling maneuver, they struck each other on the head and fell senseless to the ground. After a few moments, Durjaya rose and lifted his mace again. Abhimanyu, fatigued from his long fight against so many opponents, slowly rose to his haunches. As he tried to get to his feet, Durjaya struck him on the crown of his head with his full force. Crushed by the blow, Abhimanyu dropped lifeless to the ground. As the Kauravas looked on, he fell backwards to the earth, with his limbs thrown out. Drona and the other Kuru chiefs surrounded the fallen prince. He appeared like a wild elephant slain by a hunter. Thousands of troops came around him. They looked on him as if he were a forest fire extinguished after consuming a forest during the summer season, or a tempest that had died down after crushing countless trees. He lay with a peaceful expression on his handsome face, his red eyes gazing up at the sky. Even in death, he was as lustrous and splendid as the full moon in autumn. The Kauravas roared with delight. Their indefatigable opponent was finally brought down. They danced about on the field, waving their weapons. Overwhelmed with relief at being delivered from danger, they embraced one another and laughed loudly. In the sky, many rishis and siddhas looked down on the prince, who seemed to them like the moon dropped from the heavens. They let out cries of woe and exclaimed, "Alas, assailed at once by 6 Kaurava Maharatas, this hero..." All around Abhimanyu was a scene of utter destruction. Innumerable men and animals lay slaughtered amid scattered chariots, weapons, armor, and ornaments. The field was all but impassable, choked with the dead and the dying. Arms, legs, and heads lay all around in a bloody mess. The battlefield assumed an awful appearance, which struck terror into the hearts of cowards. The sun had reached the western horizon just as the prince was slain. With joy, the corps of troops withdrew from the field, leaving Abhimanyu lying amid the carnage that he had created. Hearing the Kaurava's cheers, Yudhisthira could guess what happened. As soon as he saw Jayadrath holding him and his brother's back, he had feared the worst. His fears were confirmed as news of Abhimanyu's death reached him. Yudhisthira was distraught. He thought of Arjuna, still contending with the Shamshaptakas. Soon he would return. What would he say when he heard that his young son had been sent alone into the Chakravyuha? Yudhisthira trembled. Why had he allowed that boy to go? Only because he feared his own capture. He had caused Abhimanyu's death. Turning to his brothers, Yudhisthira said, Subhadra's heroic son, having never shown his back in battle, has been slain. The child has now ascended to heaven. After slaying numerous warriors, he has followed in their wake. Doubtlessly the boy, who was equal in power to Krishna and Arjuna, has reached Indra's opulent mansion. Although himself afflicted by grief, Yudhisthira tried to console his brothers and followers. We should not grieve for this boy who performed pious deeds. He has surely attained the regions of righteousness that are ever sought by the virtuous. In silent grief, the Pandavas withdrew. As they made their way to their tent, they moved like wooden dolls. They slumped into their seats and sat gazing at the ground. Yudhisthira wept. Desiring to please me, the prince penetrated Drona's array, like a lion entering a herd of cattle. He forced the best of the Kurus, all accomplished in weapons and fighting, to turn back. After crossing the Kaurava's ocean-like army, killing many of their heroes, Krishna's nephew has gone to the next world. How can I even look at Arjuna or the auspicious Subhadra, bereft now of their beloved son? What meaningless, disjointed, and incoherent words will we speak to Krishna and Arjuna when they return? Yudhisthira held his head in his hands. Desiring only my safety, I sent this child into battle. I have thereby injured Subhadra, Arjuna, and Keshava. A foolish man seeks his own gain without seeing the painful consequences that will result. Thus did I act covetously, oblivious to what was sure to happen. How could I have placed that child, who deserved every luxury and indulgence, into the thick of battle? Now he lies slain on the cold earth. We too will soon have to join him, consumed by the grief-laden glances of Arjuna. Yudhisthira's cries fill the tent. All the warriors and kings present also wept. Abhimanyu had been a great favorite among them. Even though he was only 16, he had not hesitated to join his father in the war. His guileless and cheerful attitude had endeared him to everyone. Although he was the son of one who could afford protection even from the entire celestial host, still he has been killed. Surely now the Kauravas will have become afraid. Filled with rage at the unfair killing of his son, Arjuna will annihilate them all. Soon the mean-minded Duryodhan, seeing his forces massacred, will give up his own life in grief. Alas, beholding the incomparable Abhimanyu fallen to the earth, I can derive no pleasure either from victory, the kingdom, or even immortality itself. As Yudhisthira lamented, Vyasadeva suddenly entered the tent. Yudhisthira composed himself and stood to receive the sage. Along with his brothers, he worshipped him and offered him a fine seat in their midst. When Vyasadeva was seated at his ease, Yudhisthira said, O great Rishi, Subhadra's son has been slain in battle by a number of vicious bowmen who surrounded him on all sides. A mere child, he has been killed while contending with overwhelming numbers. Wishing to do us good, He penetrated the hostile array, but was trapped and slaughtered without mercy while we were being held back by the Sindhu king. Alas, my heart has been seized by an unbearable sorrow. Vyasadeva's reply was gentle. O king, O son, you possess superior wisdom and should not lament like this. Men of your caliber are never confused by calamity. The heroic Abhimanyu has reached paradise after slaying numerous enemies. His deeds far exceeded his years, and he has attained everlasting fame. Why do you grieve? O Yudhisthira, no creature can violate the law of death. Death takes gods, Gandharvas, Danavas, and all others away without fail. Comforted by Vyasadeva's presence, the Pandavas listened to his soothing words. When he stopped speaking, Yudhisthira said, So many of the earth's rulers now lie shorn of pride and power. Striving in battle, filled with hopes of victory, they have fallen into the fire of their enemies' anger. Now they lie motionless on the earth. Seeing such slaughter, we have come to understand the meaning of death. O learned sage, why does death take men away? Wherefrom did death arise? O grandsire, please explain this to us. Vyasadeva closed his eyes. Although he was emaciated and covered with dirt from his continuous austerities, he shone with a mystical effulgence that spread around him like the glow of the moon. Sitting cross-legged on the costly seat, he seemed like a dark gem set in gold. After a few moments, he began to narrate the ancient history of the origin of death in the world, how Brahma first brought it into being. The sage then told the Pandavas about the many kings who had succumbed to death in the history of the world, even though they were rich in asceticism and pious merits. After mentioning each of the departed kings and describing their sacrifices and pious acts, Vyasadeva concluded, When such personalities had to die, each of them far superior to the prince from the point of piety, you should not lament for the boy. By laying down his life in battle, he has gone to regions only attained by those who perform the foremost of sacrifices. There he will reside in unending bliss. No enjoyment in this world would be able to entice him away from where he is now gone, O king. He shines like a god in a splendid new body. We should grieve for those still living, rather than for those who have attained such an end. Vyasadeva exhorted Yudhisthira to remain firm and to finish the fight. Grief achieved nothing other than to reduce energy of those who indulged in it. The sage concluded, Know this is truth, dear child. Rise up and gird your loins. Having heard about death and about Abhimanyu's glorious end, give up your lamentation and remain firm in your duty. Yudhisthira asked the sage how Jayadrath had been able to hold him and his brothers in check, and Vyasadeva told him about Lord Shiva's boon. Thus was that weak king able to achieve this astonishing feat. Had it not been for him, you would have followed that boy and saved his life. Destiny is supreme, O king. No man can change fate's course. Knowing this, take heart and perform your God-given duty. Surely the Lord's inscrutable will is meant for the world's welfare. If you simply follow his will, then you will understand everything in time. Vyasadeva stood up and bade the Pandavas farewell, and then disappeared. Yudhisthira was consoled, but he was still worried on how to approach the news to Arjuna. He would be back at any moment. No one would have dared to inform him of his son's death on his way back to the tent. They would leave it to Yudhisthira to do that. The king looked at Abhimanyu's empty seat, now draped with his banner. Breathing heavily, Yudhisthira watched the tent entrance as it flapped in the evening breeze.